All right. Let's continue on a nanoscale photonics, meaning plasmonics. So this is way to go in a really nanoscale. You might have heard term plasmonics. I don't know if you have any idea what it means. But the basic unit here is a so-called surface plasmon polarity. Complicated name, so that's why people always say plasmons, even they mean this. And they are density waves of free electrons on a metal. So basically, if you have your metal surface here, this is metal, this is whatever, it can be air, some dielectric material, transparent. And in a metal, we talked last time, metal is a metal because you have a lot of electrons which can scatter. So basically you have a lot of free electrons. So you have a huge amount of electrons here traveling. And what it means, what happens there in the surface plasmon polariton is that you have a wave of oscillating electrons, mechanically oscillating electrons. So it's a kind of a longitudinal wave, same kind than a sound wave. That's why you are hearing me, because the air molecules are oscillating. So you have a density wave, higher density, lower density, and so on. And these electrons, if you have a higher density, you have negative charge, because your metal is, of course, background is positive. And if your electrons are evenly distributed, they cancel this positive, and you have neutral metal. But now you have a higher electron density here, and lower electron density here, so you have less electrons, so you have positive. And then you have, again, higher density of electrons and lower density of electrons. So you get this kind of electron wave. So this is a, what is a density symbol usually? Yeah, exactly. This one. Density of electrons. And so basically you have a going like that. So here is low, and you have positive background charge. Here it is high, and of course you have a negative since your electron is negative, and so on. And this wave is traveling. But of course, if you have a negative charge here, positive charge here, and here you don't have a metal. So this is air, for example, or any other transparent material. So of course, you generate electric field. It goes from plus to minus. And then comes from here from a previous part and goes here. So you have this electric field generated by this electron wave. And it's traveling the same speed as the wave travels. Because if this travels that direction, the field also travels that direction. And if you have a kind of resonant condition, of course, this field, it induces the electron to travel from here to here. So it's a little bit difficult to say, is this electron wave, is it induced by the field? Or is this field induced by electron wave, as I said? So it's a kind of chicken egg problem, which was first. And you cannot say which was first, but you can just take these famous Maxwell's equations. You can solve them in this geometry. And what you come up is many solutions. And one of the solutions is this. So this is kind of a, so it's what polariton means, actually. Polariton means hybrid excitation of light and matter in general, in any form. It's a polariton. So this is, that's why it is polariton, because it's a hybrid excitation. You have a mechanical oscillation of electrons and you have a traveling electric field, which is actually similar to the light. So you can say it's a hybrid between the electron oscillation and a photon. But now, as you can see, the electric field, the direction, is not just like that. But if this travels in that direction, your electric field is not perpendicular. Okay, it is perpendicular. It cannot be like that. So electric field cannot be along the surface. It's always pointing out to the surface. So it's like this. But the angle is not 90 degrees. So as you travel here, you can see that you can get any angle for your electric field. So that also makes it different to the light. So polarization is kind of a, okay, polarization is well defined because it's vertical. But this angle varies. And also what happens here, this field, it pretty quickly dies out from a surface. So if you plot the field as a function of distance from a surface, it's exponential decay. It's so-called evanescent field. If you have a total internal reflection, if you have a prism, for example, you put light in, and you know that at certain angles higher than you get total internal reflection, that every light is reflected and not refracted. And in this case also, you have a little bit exponential leakage out from the surface. It's a similar wave. And in a metal side, it dies out even quicker because there's electrons to screen it out. Electrons can move and kill the electric field. So it is very much kind of bound to the surface. It only exists at the surface. And the distance is, how it expands is something like 50 to 200 nanometers outside the surface and only 10 nanometer inside the surface. But it can travel on the surface. Okay, usually it's called SPP, surface Poisson polariton. And because of this, has this exponential decay, it has very high electric field at the surface. It decays exponentially, but it also increases exponentially in this direction. So actually you have, if you think a photon, you have certain electric field for one photon. If you increase intensity, you increase electric field, but you cannot do that forever. But if you think of a single photon, it has certain electric field. And if you think single plasmon, which means quantum of a surface plasmon polariton, I don't know what it's called. It's a plasmon quantum or plasmon. So the electric field is much higher for that compared to single photon. So you can interact with a material much stronger way. So this is a nanoscale localization of electromagnetic fields. So you are, we are already behind the diffraction limit in this direction. And you can go also beyond the diffraction limit in this direction, so in a traveling direction. Okay. And then there's a question, can we excite surface plasmon with a light? So if you have a metallic surface, if you take your flashlight off from your phone and shine it to the metal, that do you induce surface plasmons? Answer is no. Answer is maybe little bit, very tiny amount, but not much. And why not? It's because you have this kind of a dispersed Poisson relation. So if you have this K vector momentum, and then you have a energy. So regular light has a, I think we wrote it. Regular light has a energy, which is omega h bar is directly related to K by theta C. Now I don't remember myself. Check it. Okay, let's put it like that. Then it's certainly correct. It might be missing some constant, but it's a direct line. So the energy of your regular light is directly related to the momentum. And you have this kind of a light line here. So this is a usual light. So you start increasing your K vector, and you start increasing momentum, which means, if you remember how K was defined, 2 pi over lambda. So it means that you're decreasing your wavelength and increasing your energy. So it goes linearly as a function of K. But in the case of surface plasmon, you have extra momentum bound to the electron. Because photon is a massless particle. It doesn't have a mass. That's why you have this kind of linear dispersion relation. But now you have electron mass and you start bending this curve. And here it means that your wavelength gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And your energy doesn't increase much. So you can push this to the really tiny wavelengths. If you look the, for example, point here, the K vector is about 2 times the K vector of a regular light at the same energy. This means that your wavelength has dropped to half. And usually the visible range is exactly here. So there's a so-called surface plasmon resonance energy here, and it kind of saturates to that. It cannot go higher. And here you start it again with this kind of bulk plasmons. So this means that this kind of electron density wave just travels inside the metal. You don't need any surface. This only happens at a very high frequencies. So that's why basically all the metals, they are transparent at the very high energies. You know, X-rays go through metal except lead. So this is a regular plasmons, not a surface plasmons. And nowadays, since people are too lazy to talk about surface plasmons, they just talk plasmons. People have started to talk about these plasmons as a bulk plasmon to separate them. But okay, we don't go to this. Let's talk surface plasmon because that's more interesting because that happens in the visible light and that's more useful because it happens on the surface of the metal. But you have this dispersion relation. So there's some problem immediately visible. Yeah, there's also a formula, but you can look it and, but this is much more important to know how it looks as a plotted. So you increase momentum, so you decrease your wavelength, and you can have a different K vector at the same energy. But doesn't that cause already problem? If you want to induce surface plasmon, you have a light coming, you have certain K vector, you have certain frequency which tells the energy. So for example, here. And now you want to put a couple it to the surface plasmon. So, okay, you know that the energy, you cannot energy is a constant, total energy is a constant. So let's assume that you cannot put this energy anywhere else. So your frequency stays the same for plasmons. So if you take here frequency, so you should induce this plasmon, but then you have a different k vector. But second law in the physics is that the momentum is a constant. It cannot disappear either. So that kind of prevents you to couple surface plasmon because you cannot sustain the energy and the momentum at the same time. That's why you cannot couple directly, but just by shining the light. So here is a problem. So you have a frequency of your light. Oh yeah, there was this.
Now it's correct.
Yeah. So you have your frequency of your light, and you of course energy is conserved. So you should have the same frequency for your plasmon, but then you cannot have the same momentum. And one way to go around is to use a prism exactly like that, what I just draw already. And then here would be nice to have some different color. No more. Nobody uses a colorful anymore. There used to be a lot. So you have your k vector here. And inside the prism, that is longer than outside the prism for same energy, because you have refractive index change. And now what happens here, you would have a small thin layer of metal, and you have this total internal reflection, and you have this emergent field here. It actually goes through the metal. And if you remember this picture what I draw for you for quantum mechanical tunneling, you have a, now I have running out of space here. You have this barrier, you have wave function coming, and then you have exponential decay inside, and you have a little bit left this side. So this exponential decay is exactly the same than here. So you can couple this photon coming in a prism to a surface plasmon traveling here. And why you can couple this now? You can compensate this momentum because this is surface plasmon with a metal and air. It has a k vector, something like that. And this is too short to couple it, as you see from that picture. It's too small. But here it's longer. And now if you take certain angle so that this component of your k vector matches to that, then it couples. It's only at a certain angle for certain energy. You can couple. So it's so-called resonant angle. You can do it also so that you put your metal a little bit away from a prism and then you have an air gap here. Same way it works, but this is much more difficult to fabricate since doing this kind of spacer of a 50 nanometer or 100 nanometer is a difficult. But putting 100 nanometer metal on top of prism is just evaporation or sputtering, and that's it. So that's how you can couple. And this technique is actually used a lot. So you can buy a lot of commercial devices, especially in the biologic. It's called surface plasmon resonance sensor, SPR sensor. It's a little bit misleading name because later we will talk localized surface plasmon, which has a resonance, and this has nothing to do with that. But it means that, as I mentioned, that a certain wavelength, certain energy, you have a resonant angle where you can couple surface plasmons. And this is exactly that. So you measure the angle of incidence, and this is how much the intensity is reflected. So you measure your intensity here. You have a detector here. And in a certain angle, nothing is reflected because everything is coupled to surface pasta. That's why you have a dip here. And it really goes from a 60% reflection to zero. It's a big dip. And the point how you can use this as a detector is that it's really sensitive because you have your surface. This is your metal surface. And then you have your prism, and then you couple your light. You have your plasmon field exponentially decaying here. So what matters is a refractive index near the surface. If a refractive index changes here, it doesn't have any effect. But if it changes next to the surface, you can see it immediately that your resonant condition changes, and you can see here that these are different. The resonant angle changes from here, from 53 to 54, approximately. And what induces the change here is that you have some bimolecule here, some antigens, for example, or whatever. And then you have something you want to detect, which you know that binds to this biomolecule. So they bind here. Usually, if you want to detect these creatures, whatever they are, if you want to detect them in a bulk solution, you need a lot of them to see the changes. But now here, only like a single layer of molecules, which means that in a tiny area where your light is shining, it's really a small amount what can induce the change in the refractive index only near the surface. So that's why it is very sensitive method. And it is commercially available. So here is basically, yeah, somebody can explain what this, some biology can explain what this means. Take, I know, follow it. That's it. It's some biomolecule which binds to this surface modification. So this is used a lot. And they're commercially available. You can just buy it. But of course, it depends on how you modify your surface. What binds to the surface determines what you detect. And plasmon is just to detect very thin layers. There's another ways to couple plasmon. So this was this Kretschmann configuration. I forgot to mention the name, but it was written there. Famous Kretschmann configuration, and then Otto configuration, which has this space here. Then what you can do is you can take this scanning near field optical microscope, which is SPM. We last time talked about scanning probe microscopy. So this is kind of scanning probe microscopy, but you have your probe is a fiber, the light goes in, and then it's tapered like that, and then you have a tiny hole here at the end. So if you zoom this hole like that, so here in the white part, light travels as in a usually, in the fiber, but at the very end, so here's some metal something to cover it so it doesn't go out. At the very end, it cannot travel because this can be like a 50 nanometer, for example, or let's put 20 nanometers. That's also used. So diffraction limit prevents the light going through. What happens is that you get this kind of evanescent field again pointing out. And if your surface is close enough, you can excite plasmons here or whatever is possible to excite. So you can get optical information from your surface in a resolution of 20 nanometer. So that looks very much like that. Kretschmann configuration. So of course you can launch a plasma. Or you can detect a plasma. Another thing to use is a grating. So this means that you have a groove certain period and you get this kind of interference effect which sums the k vectors and you actually can bounce a plasma. Or, and this comes with why I said that actually you can a little bit induce plasmon by shining light any scattering. So if you don't have a perfectly polished metal, you have some ripples there. Yeah, you lose a little bit plasma. Not very efficiently, but a little bit. Another way is that if you have a molecules near the surface, they can fluoresce. And also in the fluorescence of molecules, first you have this evanescent field components, and then you have far field components. Usually you are detecting far field components which travel a lot because evanescent field, it dies out immediately. And this is actually exactly the reason for diffraction law. So you cannot make a perfect picture from something shining light because evanescent components are lost and you only have far field components. And from far field components, you cannot make any more of the same picture. But these evanescent components, they can couple to plasmons. And this was some experiments actually done here. And we have a molecule here. We excited by shining light. So it was some coumarin dye molecule. And then that fluoresces and starts a surface plasmon, which then travels and excites another molecule here, which then can shine again outside. So you change the frequency and you kind of have a source of a surface plasmon and a detection of a surface plasmon in a nanoscale. Other people have done also things like this. So there's a grating to make a surface plasmon, which then travels on the top of a metal. And it kind of focuses here. And then it induces localized surface plasmon in this nanoparticle, which couples up to the next one and then finally to the molecule that you are aiming. We come soon to the localized surface plasmon. And actually, this behaves like an optics, the surface plasmon. So you can even do this kind of things that here you have actually groove, which you shine a lot of light. So this is just a scattering, which induces plasmon. As I said, it's not efficient. It's very bad coupling. But if you just have enough light, you get enough plasmon. So you have a big laser. And you shine light. And what you will see that the light travels. And here you have this kind of grooves on your surface, done by nanofabrication, some lithography technique. If I remember right, these are silicon dioxide, this kind of small hills. So this kind of reflects the surface plasmon to that direction. And if you look at the measurement, this is exactly what happens. Some of our plasmon travels directly this direction. Some of them hit to this wall and they are reflected to here. So this can be imaged, for example, by this scanning near field optical microscope. Then you can actually make an interferometer. So you put the wall this side and wall on this side, and both reflected the plasmons to here and the interference here. And depending on this position of this wall, you get a constructive interference on this direction or this direction. So it is actually two-dimensional optics and in a nanoscale. So you can use it really like a similar way. Of course, this interferometer is not very handy because you have to fabricate this mirror and then you want to move it 100 nanometers, which means that you fabricate the whole sample again. So it's not like moving a mirror, but idea is the same. But then comes the localized surface plasma. So in this case, there's a couple of ways to think it. One is there in the picture. So now your particle is much smaller than the wavelength. So this means that all the electrons will move down here. And then comes the next phase of your electromagnetic wave, and the electric field is the other direction, and your electrons move upwards. So they oscillate along your wave when it travels through your particle. And you basically move all your electrons. So you have your particle, and you have your electron cloud, and the whole cloud is moving up and down. And in a certain frequency, you have a resonance, mechanical resonance of these electrons. Because they are, of course, when your electric field comes and pushes it up, they don't escape. Because this is positive and this cloud is negative, it's pulled back by the electric forces. So you can find some kind of maximum where the forces cancel each other. And then it starts to oscillate, and these electrical forces, they induce certain resonance frequency. And at that frequency, you can very efficiently induce plasmon in this particle. And it's only certain frequency. You can also think it as a... So we have our plasmon here. So we have electric field here, and this is traveling, the whole thing is traveling from the, let's say, this direction. Now you take your surface and you roll it. Somehow you are very handy in molding metal, and you put your metal surface in a circle. Then, of course, you have the same surface plasmon traveling on this surface. And to be able to travel, now we are canceled here, I made it wrong. You have to match the wavelength so that it goes nicely. That when it goes for one round, it kind of increases the same. So you have constructive interference. And of course, if you make a wavelength longer, and you make it as big as possible in a circle, you start here, you go up, and you go negative here. What you end up is this. So you have your electrons moving as a one cloud. And this is the strongest resonance. And since it's kind of traveling through the particle, of course, the particle size determines where the resonance is. The bigger the particle, the longer the resonance, because you can have a longer wavelength there. This is one way to think it. Another way to think is this. In this picture, you don't get the idea why the size affects. As it affects the resonant wavelength, this gives you the idea for that. And also, it doesn't need to be around. It can be this kind of pyramid, for example. And the sharper the corner, the higher is the field there. This is basic electrostatics. But it also holds here in the plasmons. And you can fabricate this kind of nanoprisms, for example. So you have really high electric fields here at the corners. And if you want a really high electric field, then you make this kind of a pair of the particles. And then you have a so-called gap mode here. Because a plasmon of this particle and a plasmon of this particle, they interact in the middle. And you, most of our energy is inside here. And what happens there also, if you look the distance between the particles. So usually, if you have a cold nanoparticle, for example, actually this is not gold, since here it's probably silver. Silver nanoparticle, you have a resonance, for example, here at 340 nanometers, when the distance here is at 20 nanometer. When you start to reduce the distance, this resonance wavelength shifts to longer wavelength, and you start to have a higher order mode. And it also increases. So if you see here, it's 10 to power of 3. So this is kind of a field enhancement. If you compare how much field you have here and to the how much field you have outside, so how much field you put in. So if you put in field and measure the field inside here, gap, you are 1,000 times or 7,000 times higher field in a gap. So you really increase the energy of a photon. And here you have actually 500,000 times higher field inside. So really the enhancement in the electric field can be huge. You don't get that high enhancement in the surface boson polariton. It's only in the localized surface boson, and especially this kind of sharp corners, or yeah, here is a sharp corner and you have a 20,000 times. So you can really increase your field by this technique. And here is example, what affects to the plasmon resonance. So the material, so these are same size particles, nanoparticles, and you can see the color changes because the plasmon resonance is at a different wavelength. Why color is, for example, red, is that your plasmon resonance is at the 530, something like that, nanometers. This means that's a green. 530 nanometers is a green color. And if you put white light to this kind of solution, all the green color is absorbed to the surface plasma. So it's taken away. What is left is a opposite color, red. This is platinum, palladium, copper, silver. So all noble metals are good for plasmonics. Then, as I mentioned, the size matters. So these are gold nanoparticles, different sizes, 5 to 100 nanometer. And you can see that the color changes, but not so dramatically than here. So what I told here is not the full story. According to this picture, the size would matter a lot. But of course, you have to make it a 3D, and then there's a material constant and so on. It doesn't matter so much, but it matters. And then the geometry. If you have a rod, if you have triangles or shorter rod or round ones, you can have a different color. And this is exactly due to this kind of where you have a sharp corners, you have a highest field, and usually the frequency is also shifted, like in a gap mode also. So you can really tune it. And also, environment effects. So you can use this similar way than surface plasmon resonance detection. So you have your nanoparticles, you cover them with some molecule, which attaches some other molecule. And then this other molecule is attached on the top, you change the refractive index next to the particle, and your resonance is shifted. Basically, this should be even more sensitive. Unfortunately, it's not so handy. That's why the SPR is still the more common way to do it. But there's a lot of research to make this also as nice as a SPR. Where you have seen nanoparticles in every church window, that's how you make this color glass, especially red one. That's why the red one is most expensive glass, because it has a gold nanoparticle. Some copper or something else is done for other colors. But this is, so it was invented long, long, long time ago. But of course, at that time, people didn't know what happens, but they just put a gold salt in and see, oh, it was because red is nice. But white because red is nanoparticles. Also, you can have a whole arrays. So you have an arrays of a whole, and this whole act as a nanoparticle. In a nanoparticle, you have a refractive index of metal and surrounding. If you make a hole, you just invert refractive indexes. So this is a metal, and this is a air. And basically, everything works same way. You just invert the dielectric constant or refractive indexes. And certain resonant light goes through. There's actually a little bit funny story about this whole array, how it was invented or found. The guy, Thomas Ebbesen, who was actually founded, they fabricated this kind of filter, metallic filter with tiny holes for some molecules. And it went to the mechanical workshop to make holes. Please do this size holes. And they did. And then he measured how much light goes through and calculated the size of a hole. And it was much bigger. So he went back to workshop and said that you failed, do it again. And they make it a couple of times before he started to look really by microscope what is happening there. And the hole was correct size, but still where there was much more light going through than supposed to. And it was going through because it induces surface plasmons on the holes, which then scattered on the other side. So that was how it was found. But they fabricated quite many filters before they realized. But then it was a big finding. Okay. So plasmonics is basically a one nanophotonics. It can couple. Light can be coupled in a plasmon, and a plasmon can couple back to propagating light with certain tricks. And we can use light to generate nanoscale electromagnetic fields, and we can observe lights emitted by plasmonic nanostructures. So basically, we are squeezing light to nanoscale and the back. You can also use it to many applications. Of course, here, one thing which was mentioned in one slide, but I forgot to say it aloud, so I say it now. There's a losses. Then you surface plasmon travels on a metal surface. Metal, because it has to oscillate the electrons, it consumes the energy also. So it doesn't travel forever like a light. But it only travels few microns, tens of microns. It is good enough if you want to make integrated chips. Usually the distances are much smaller there. But you cannot use a plasmon to transfer light for internet for here to US, for example, like you now put a fiber and put a light in. So it will die immediately. So that is kind of also holding back a little bit. But for example, Raman scattering. I don't know if you are familiar with Raman. So this means that you have your molecule, you shine in light, you excite it to certain other level. This actually doesn't need to be a real level. It can be whatever. Because quantum mechanics allows you to excite to some virtual level for a little bit, so you can borrow the energy. So this matches to your photon, what you put in. It's excited to this state, and then it falls back, and it emits the same photon. So this just means this is a Rayleigh scattering. So it just means that you have your molecule, your light comes in, and a little bit diffracts it some other direction. So basically, diffraction. But sometimes, since molecules has these vibrational states, which means that how the nucleus are vibrating, are they vibrating like that, or are they vibrating like that, or like that? All this has a little bit different energies. So sometimes it can happen that you excite your molecule and you fall back to a different vibrational state. So So there's a little bit difference in the energy, what you are emitting, what you are absorbing and what you are emitting. So, and this is a difference. So efficiency of this kind of scattering is something like, what I would lie to you, maybe one in a billion, something really, really tiny. So 99.999% is a Rayleigh scattering. And then there's a little bit of this scattering. And how the Raman usually, okay, sometimes you can do it other way around, that your molecule happens to be in a vibration or some excited vibrational state, and you excite it high up and it comes back to the lower state. Now you have more energy emitted than putting in. And the difference is again the same. So this is so-called anti-Stokes scattering and Stokes scattering. But this is more stronger because that's more probable. And you measure this difference in the Raman scattering. So you put huge amount of light in, and you see what is reflected out, and then you filter your frequency, what you are putting in, you filter that out, and see the other frequencies what come out. And if you just put enough light, you can see these other frequencies, and then you can see the difference in the wavelength, difference in energy, and you get the vibrational state of the molecules. This is very efficient way to find out what are the vibrational energies of any molecules. And that depends on the molecule chemical composition. So basically people are talking fingerprint of a molecule. Every molecule has a different vibrational frequencies possible. And you can map them out. But unfortunately, usually you need a lot of molecules and you need huge amount of light to get measurable signal out because it's so inefficient method. But if you put plasmons on a surface, so you have a localized surface plasmons, or you can actually use a surface plasmon polaritons also. As we just saw, you have a 500,000 times higher field. So this means that they couple to molecules much more efficiently also. And they increase the probability for this kind of Raman scattering. And because Raman scattering efficiency, you increase the absorption by electric field square. And then you have also emission, which is increased electric field square. So it's electric field to the power of 4 increase. And if you increase electric field by 500,000 times, that to the power of 4 is a huge amount of increase. So you get much more light out and you can actually detect Raman signal also from a single molecule. This is done already. And it's called surface enhanced Raman scattering SERS. You probably have heard this name earlier also. And you can say 10 to power of 11 signal amplification. Because you increase the absorption and you increase the emission of the Raman process. So both processes are increased, this one and this one. You can also make it, so this is kind of, you have a plasma resonances everywhere, you throw your molecules and detect them. But you can do more systematically. You can not put a plasmonic surface, but you take a metal tip. Again, STM, Cunningproof microscope, AFM, you have a metal tip, they are good. And you put that next to the surface. Then you have a plasma resonance, but only at this point. So then you get a SERS signal only from that point. Nowhere else. And then you move along and you can see how much molecules you have, where you have your molecules, and so on. Or what kind of molecules you have, what positions. So this is called deep enhanced Raman spectroscopy, TERS. So they like this shortening a lot, TERS and TERS and whatever. These are nowadays common terms. And for example, here, if you have a this kind of plasmonic material on the surface, you get this blue Raman signal, so you have these nice peaks. All these peaks mean some vibrational state available. And these peaks is actually Raman shift. It means shift from your original wavelength. And as you can see now, the unit is 1/cm, which is this wrong defined definition of a wave number, so 1/wavelength. But it's used still a lot. And if you don't have this plasmonic surface, but same amount of molecule, this is your signal. Nothing much. So you can really see tiny amounts of molecules. Also, there's a lot of development to make a plasmonic solar cells. Usually, solar cells are thick. They are expensive to fabricate. They use a lot of silicon. It would be nice to have them thin, even flexible. And you can then put them anywhere in a clothing. But since they are thin, most of the light goes through. But if you put plasmonic particles there, so this plasmon resonance induces much higher field. It absorbs much more easily. So you get efficient up. Also, if it's not absorbed by the plasmon, it can be also scattered, which means that your light travels inside your film much longer. These both help. So you can just put nanoparticles inside your thin solar cells, and efficiency can be increased a lot. So that is one technique nowadays to make a thinner solar cells. So summary of plasmonics, electromagnetic waves. I think you can just read this later. Everything same. Then I will talk a little bit further what is nowadays having a quite common topic is changing chemistry by confined light, so-called polariton chemistry. This is a hot topic nowadays. Also, we are doing it here. So you make a higher electric field. Okay, this is just a funny picture to make how you squeeze light. So, but you basically use squeeze light by making it as a plasma. That's a squeezing of a light. And when you do this, you get a higher electric field and stronger interaction of the material. Okay, we went this through already, everything. Okay, but so far we have talked about weak coupling, absorption and emission. So we had excited molecule, which then fluorescence, so it emits. It can actually emit a plasmon, as I showed in one couple of slides earlier. And then this surface plasmon can be absorbed by the molecule again to make it excited. So you have either case and you can travel back and forth. But if this coupling, so you have this absorption and emission happening much stronger because you have so high field of a surface plasmon that is happening constantly. So you are all the time traveling back and forth. And if it's happening fast enough, you start to make it virtual process. And what you end up is a system. Okay, so this is I don't mind these terms, but you can look here. Sorry, I went a little bit further. So this is a K vector and this is a energy. So this is a dispersion again. And this is a dispersion of a plasmon. You remember it bends like that. So you have a different K vectors, you have different energy of a plasmons, and in certain K vector, it matches to the energy of the molecule, which is this one here. Here you can have absorption and emission because energies are same and molecule don't have a K vector, so it doesn't matter where it crosses. But now you start to have absorption and emission much faster than basically any decay process. So when you excite a molecule, it decays down and then it emits and so on. But if this reabsorption and emission happens much, much faster, it comes to a virtual process. And what you end up is a system in a so-called strong coupling limit, and you have a hybrid mode where you have a simultaneously excited molecule and a plasma. Now it's a hybrid mode or between these two, and the energy change also. This person, you get this kind of a gap exactly where they crossed, and they never crossed. But here you have a hybrid mode, which changes here is a molecular because the energy is the same than molecule. And here it's 50-50, molecular and plasmon. You cannot say which one. The energy is divided between these two. And here it is plasmon. And you have the other mode also, so-called lower polariton. So this is also called polariton because it's a hybrid state between a matter, which is a molecule, and a light plasmon in this case. And the surface plasmon was actually also a surface plasmon polariton. So it's a polariton of a polariton. But that's why it was good to call it only surface plasmon, because then you don't get this double polariton terms. But basically, you have a hybrid state. And now since this energy changes here, so originally you had this molecular energy. And as you know, all the chemistry depends on the energy state of your molecules. Now you make this hybrid mode, your molecular energy state is different. So you can change the chemical behavior of your molecule by this method, by coupling it to a light mode. And actually, you don't even have to put light in. If you just put your molecule on top of nanoparticle, the state for this plasmon state exists, and you get this hybrid state. You don't need to put a light. You put just light to measure it. But you can change the chemical behavior even in the dark, just by putting molecules on top of a plasmon structure or so-called optical cavities. So there's a first of all measurements happening earlier. And if you put in a calculation form, so this is kind of this coupling strength, which is directly proportional to this gap. And this is your number of photons. But even if you put this to zero, you still have this one. So you don't need to put a light. It still happens. So it's basically you can talk coupling with a vacuum field. So coupling with a dark field. And here, for example, you can see that if you have a ground state, an excited state of your molecule. So usually what happens here is you excite your molecule from here to here. What happens? It changes, some reaction happens and it goes to here. And then it falls back to ground state. So nothing happened. Or except this, basically this reaction, whatever this reaction coordinate is, it can be proton transfer or twisting of some chemical bond or something. So it does this chemical reaction and returns to a ground state. But now if you make this polariton thing, that you couple this excited state to the plasmon mode, what you have is an upper polariton and a lower polariton. And here at the lower polariton, you have a minimum. Now, if you excite your molecule, it's in a minimum, so a reaction cannot happen anymore. But you actually emit a photon and go back to ground state. So you prevent your chemical reaction and you make it fluorescent. You change the behavior of molecules just by putting it on top of a plasmon particle. Okay, that was a little bit what is going nowadays. And the last topic would be metamaterials. So if you think normal material, you have a wavelength much longer than the atoms. And you don't need to care single atoms. So you can define effective parameters like a refractive index, what we talked, dielectric constant and permeability. This determines how your wave is traveling. But now if you make structured materials, so you make this kind of microfabricated structures which are longer, bigger than the wavelength, then you start to have a reflections and the refraction, and you have to calculate where your light is going, and you cannot anymore simplify it by 2-3 parameters. But now if you fabricate these small enough so that they are again smaller than the wavelength, now they start to behave again like a material which you can define by these three parameters. But now you can control these three parameters by these structures. What kind of structures you make? So you can make artificially refractive index whatever you want. Okay, that's a little bit more difficult, or maybe not whatever you want, but something fancy. For example, here you can see the usual refraction. Snell's law works nicely. It is refracted a little bit deeper angle, but here it is reflected backwards. This doesn't happen in any natural material. And it happens only if a refractive index is negative. And this you can make by metamaterials. Make certain kind of structures which are smaller than your wavelength, and they behave so that you get a negative refractive index. So nanoparticles have optical response that depends on the size, shape, and material. This we know. And now we put them in a periodic lattice with sub-wavelength periodicity. We can create materials with different properties. And one of one kind of structure usually used is this kind of so-called split ring resonator. So it's a ring which is split. And this, if you make the lump element model, make it bigger and model as an electrical component, it means that you have a capacitor and an inductor. And this is so-called LC resonator. So it has certain resonant frequency where it oscillates. And the smaller you make it, the higher frequency. And if you make it really nanoscale, you can have this resonance at a visible wavelength. And close to the resonance, you can have a negative permeability, a negative magnetic response. Okay, that doesn't help you yet all the way, because N was square root of a dielectric constant permeability. So now you can make this negative. But to have N negative, you need to have a both negative. Okay, the formula gives you just positive N, because formula is not fully, it's not full formula. It only works for natural materials. You have to change the formula also. But now you can make electric resonance. It's the simplest case, it's just a wire. And now you have electrons oscillating here back and forth. And you get electric resonance, and you get this negative also, and then you have a negative refractive index. And here is, as you can see, green, there's a wire. So that gives you electric resonance, and then the split rings give a magnetic resonance, and you get both negative at the same time. So this is a big structure. So this was done in some megahertz range, gigahertz, so microwaves first. And now people have pushed it almost to the visible, and actually have pushed it to the visible. I should have actually put the so-called FISNET structures. I should have put a picture sorry, I forgot to add it. So it's this kind of structure where you have a metallic structure. And this, of course, continues forever, all direction, and this is basically metal. Very simple looking structure. But if you look it from sideways, it's also like that you have a substrate. And then if you look here, cross section of this, you have metal, and then you have an insulator, and then you have another layer of metal. So this kind of three layers which are making this form. And then you can get negative refractive index to visible range. And this is something like 100 nanometer. Nobody saw in online because the camera was a little bit too high. Now they see it. But it's a fishnet structure. If you put fishnet metamatter in a Google, you get millions of pictures. So this is a keyword. It comes from a structure. You don't use it for fishing. But if you would have this kind of material, what you can do is they you basically, so this is a normal material. So your refraction is happening forward. The angle changes, but it's always forward. But in a negative index material, it goes backwards. And what happens also is that you can make a super lens because it's scattering backwards like that, and here also backwards. You don't need to make this kind of a usual lens shape. But you just put a flat of this material and you have perfect lens. And it actually goes beyond refraction law. Because it can also catch, if it's close enough, it can also catch the near field. And you can get a perfect image by this kind of a lens. And also, what people are doing is invisible cloaks. So you can bend your light to go around your objective, looking like that it never met the objective. This makes it visible, invisible. So you have here, this is a usually, then light comes here, it diffracts here, and you can see that a lot of light is missing here. All the energy is scattered here at the edges, so you get a shadow. But now if you make a cloak so that your waves are bending correct way, you can hide it. Okay, this is a little bit more complicated. I don't start going through how it is built, but it has been built also in a microwave region. Only problem in both negative index materials and this kind of cloaking things are that they work only very narrow spectral range. So maybe for this negative refractive index, so maybe it's from 500 to 520. Nanometers. So only certain green light has a negative refractive index. And to make it spectrally wide, that's much more difficult because all the wavelengths behave differently. Also, what you can do is you can slow down the light. So there has been this kind of experiment where you put the light in. And then you gradually start changing the refractive index so that actually first stops violet light and blue and then all the rainbow colors, they stop at different position of this prism and they don't propagate anymore. So you can stop your light. You can catch the rainbow as in the song. But you can do it in reality. And you can also do metal surfaces. So this kind of structure, so they look funny, but they are exactly that because you change the phase of your wave, how it comes. And if you start calculate how the wave affects, how a wave behaves in this kind of structure, you see that the phase changes. And if a phase changes, you get a different interference. And in the instead of usual interference, maximum here, you might get it there. Or you might get two of them. Or you might totally change the behavior of your light. So these are really studied nowadays, so they can totally change the optics, how it behaves. And you can put optics as tiny structures and electronics, hopefully. Currently, they are too lossy and a narrow bandwidth, which I already mentioned both. So these are the problems people are fighting. And all these structures, they are based on plasmons, which are on a metal, but metal has a dissipation. So it always eats some energy. So nowadays people are actually finding a ways how to do these kind of ideas without metal, using just dielectric materials. But then you have to find some other basic elements than surface plasmon. And this is a bit difficult. So there is some Bloch waves, which is if you make certain interfaces between the dielectric materials, you have a similar ideas than the surface plasmon. Okay, so this was basic idea of a metal material. We don't go in more details because they can get really complicated. If you want to calculate, usually you cannot do it by pen and paper calculations. So you have to model your structure by finite element method, which means that you divide your structure to tiny, tiny elements and then solve Maxwell's equation in between these elements. There can be billions of elements. So this means that you put it in a computer and let it run. So this is a usual method, how these are designed. So these allow materials that do not exist in nature. That's a key thing here. That's basically it for this day. Any questions?